This is Ken Clem from Spring Hill, Florida. It is my honor and privilege to introduce you to the author of Evil Medicine, the creator of Dead Doctors Don't Lie and award-winning ad campaigns such as Tomato Warning. He is a co-founding partner of Mentoring for Free from Monticello, Florida, Mr. Richard Dennis.
I appreciate that introduction. You know, one of the things that I love about life is irony. And I don't know, I just relish irony. And so I get an email from Michael saying that he can't be on the call today. He has something else that he has to do, and asking me if I can do a training. And I email him back and say, sure, what do you want me to do a training on? And and I get an email back, I'm taking action. So here we have a blue personality asking a green personality to do a training on taking action. You know, what could possibly be more ironic in life than that? So anyway, it made me laugh. But it's also really appropriate because tonight's call, and I hope you can be on tonight's call at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, because tonight's call is about making decisions and taking action. And I think it'll be really worthwhile for you. But this call is going to be about a story. I'm going to tell you my story. No explanation here. On September 26, 1989, Cheryl and I were at Doctor's Hospital in Miami, and our son had had some tests, and we'd talking to the doctor afterwards, and you know, we knew he had some coordination problems, and the doctor says, you know, I have to run definitive chemical tests to be sure, but I can tell you he has Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And Garth was 4 years old. He had just had his fourth birthday. And our world turned upside down. You know, I was a bus driver. I had worked for years at trying to start businesses, many MLMs, and you know, some little success, but not much. And over the next couple of years, as I realized the medical community offered no hope, and the life expectancy was generally about 16 years, and I was going to watch my son wither away, because that's what muscular dystrophy does. You know, you just lose the muscles in the body. And again, life expectancy 16, and we knew the last probably 3 or 4 years he'd be pretty much incapacitated. I'm looking at this, he's 4 years old now, I'm figuring he's got about 8 useful years of life here. And we have 3 older daughters, he had 3 big sisters. And you know, what's going on in my mind is I have to figure out something. I've got like 8 years to do things with him, if the doctors are right, and I've gotten to the point where I didn't trust any of them, but I knew the clock was ticking. And I had gone I was, you know, green personality, and action was not was not much in my vocabulary. You know, plotting and thinking and planning and strategizing, boy, I was good at that crap. But now I was at a point where excuses didn't matter. I'd made excuses all my life for not achieving what I wanted. Didn't matter anymore. And not only that, but because I'd talked to so many people about my son's condition and realized that help just wasn't there from the mainstream medical community, I didn't care anymore. My thinking changed, and I'm telling you, I went years. You know, you have to understand a green personality to appreciate this, but I went years after this without ever caring what anyone thought of me. And I know it's not just greens, but you're concerned about what other people think about you. I just stopped. That just went away. I would ask any questions that popped into my head. I never cared how stupid I may have looked to others, and I never would have done that before. You know, it's just a very ungreen way to be. But I could hear that clock ticking. And then some things happened, and our life did change. You know, audio tapes, and I did stuff right, and I acted, and I kept at it, and all of a sudden, we were in the position to do all kinds of things with Garth. You know, and I can picture him in the desert in California. We were at the top of we rode a tram up to the top of Mount San Jacinto, out near Palm Springs, California, and he could still walk then, and he's climbing. It was tough for him, but he's climbing up the side of the hill out there, and he was a stubborn little SOB, believe me. He was going to do what he was going to do, and I can picture that day, probably a year or two later, we went up there again, and this time it was snowing up at the top, and Garth and his sister were having a snowball fight, and you know, we're from Florida. They had never seen snow before. I can remember taking a helicopter from the pier at Long Beach, me and Garth, across to Catalina Island, 26 miles across the sea, if you remember the song. We hired a ride around Catalina Island, spent several hours over there, and it was fascinating. I can remember being with Garth and two of his sisters and Cheryl on a whale watcher boat in Bar Harbor, Maine. And Cheryl and I were inside because it was cold out there. But Garth and his sisters are out in the front. They're in the bow of the boat. The three of them huddled together, and the two sisters, one on either side of him, trying to keep him warm as they watched the whales. And it was a spectacular trip. And we went rafting on the Mackenzie River up in Eugene, Oregon, where I had gone to college at the University of Oregon. And Garth was in a wheelchair by this time, but we managed to mount the wheelchair in this raft. And it wasn't whitewater, but it was exciting. One of his sisters actually fell in off the raft. And we spent several hours rafting down the Mackenzie River, you know, catching. He caught a couple of huge trout in Butte, Montana, when we were up there visiting a friend of ours, and went snowmobiling and sledding at Big Bear Lake in California, sitting all day in the sun at the racetrack in Homestead, Florida, where we lived, you know, watching the races, and there was nothing Garth, you know, Garth was a car guy, a Dodge guy, and nothing he loved more than the races when they would come to town there in Homestead. When he was in seventh grade, I rented a Viper. There was a place by the airport, Miami International Airport, that rented exotic cars, and I rented a Viper for several days and took him and one of his buddies out to the Everglades and drove all the way out to the end of the Everglades, and we went pretty fast. green fast, but we went pretty fast. And, you know, Viper was his favorite car. I remember monster trucks in the mud at the Orange Bowl, and Garth's, you know, I had found, we found a great chiropractor in Long Beach, California, and I flew Steve in to go monster truck racing with us. Steve also went to Maine with us for that that whale watching trip, and I remember so many moments with his mother and his sisters and his buddies, and all that stuff happened because I took action. Because I stopped making excuses for myself. I just stopped it. It pissed me off that I'd spent so many years doing that, and all of a sudden I realized it was just all a waste, and it, of course, I hated the reason why it all changed, but it did all change. I remember most of all the best day of my life in September of 1998, and there's nothing Garth wanted more than to drive, and he would never drive. I knew he would never drive, and this was a few days before, I guess, our rafting trip, and I'd taken Garth and Cheryl on a drive along the Pacific Coast Highway up there in Oregon, down to Florence, which was directly across from Eugene, I guess about 60 miles from Eugene, and in Florence, you know, and it's where, when I was in college, we used to go over to Florence, play in the dunes and so forth, and do bad things, As I'm driving down the highway, I see a sign that says dune buggies. You know, we rent dune buggies, and I thought, could it be possible? could he possibly drive? And so I stopped, and I went in and talked to the guy that ran the place, and he said, well, you know, can he move his hands? Can he move his legs at all? I said, yeah, a bit. He doesn't have much strength, but he can move a bit. And he says, well, you know, I think we can get this done. So they picked out a dune buggy for Garth and one for me, and I lifted him up and into the dune buggy, and I had to position his feet on the pedals and his hands on the wheel, and We practiced a little bit in the parking lot, and he could make it move, and so we go up over this ridge through the sand out into the sun. There's like a canopy of trees, and we come out and into the sun, and it's, you know, probably, I don't know, half a mile, three quarters of a mile from there is the ocean, the Pacific Ocean, and it's just beautiful and blue. The sun's in the sky, there's no clouds, it's just a blue, sunshiny day. It's a bit chilly. It's the Oregon coast, it's always chilly. You know, nobody swims there. And there's sand dunes, and the sand dunes rise and fall, and probably the highest is maybe 300 feet down, you know, and then you go down to a valley, and we started driving a bit, and it took him a little bit, but he started to get the hang of it, and he's going up and down the dunes. I went up to the highest point I could get and just sat there in my buggy and watched my son do the one thing in the world he wanted to do more than anything else, and then I see something I've seen before, because he has a scooter at home that he rides around our property. He tries to get stuck. That little son of a gun tries to get himself stuck so that he can then get unstuck. You know, and he'd do that in our yard back in the mud, and then he'd yell, "Dad!" Dad, I got tired of him yelling Dad for me to come unstick him. So over time, finally, it was his mother who had to go get him unstuck. He ticked me off because I knew what he was doing out there. Anyway, so I'm watching him, and it's a glorious day. It's a beautiful day, and it lasted about 45 minutes. And it was just so exciting for me, the best day of my life. And then his strength started to go, and then it was over. But it's a memory like the others. It's just a memory that will never leave me, and it only happened because I took action. I can remember, I guarantee you, I carried him to the bathroom and out of the bathroom a good 10,000 times. I figured it out once. Green, remember? 10,000 times over the years I carried him. And some of those times he was a funny kid, and he loved one-liners, and he would figure out some good one-liner and wait until I had him up on my shoulders, and then he would tell his one-liner to see if he could crack me up. So I, his joke was he was going to make me drop him. So I never did, but he did crack me up a few times. And if I had a job, if I had to go to work someplace, I wouldn't have been there. 10,000 times. Who would have done it? Who would have taken care of him? How would it possibly have worked? How would I have felt in subsequent years and at that time not being there? But I was there because I took action. Garth had a great life for his nearly 22 years. He was a really focused kid. He achieved a lot. And I guess what is most amazing to me, he had a great computer teacher in the high school he went to, and it's a small school. He only had it was a private school. He had a graduating class, I think, of 19 or 20. But he was an expert. He was my he was my go-to guy for any problems I had online. And he was active. Again, he was a car guy. He loved Dodge. He was very active on a website forum at the DurangoClub.com, DurangoClub.com. And Durango Club has thousands and thousands of active participants. And these guys talk all the time about all their Durangos. They post pictures and what they did with them and the work they've done on them and how many miles they have on them. And they didn't know, a couple of them knew that Garth had some kind of physical difficulty, but, he didn't really go into any detail with them. And they had no idea that by this time, this is May of 2007, he couldn't move his legs. He couldn't move his arms. He could barely move his fingers. But they knew how good he was with stuff online. They'd seen him. They'd seen stuff he'd done, and they asked him. They lost their webmaster. They asked Garth to be the webmaster for their website, and this is 3 weeks before he died. And it never happened because the other thing happened. But the fact that he could look like he was a normal person from a place where nobody could see him was just astonishing to me, and that he had so much respect from these guys. And and to him, it was just normal. He was very pleased with that, and he was making his plans of what he was going to do with this website. He never gave the slightest thought to what his body prevented him from doing. You know, not that I could see. Now, maybe he did sometime. I never saw it. He spent his time learning and figuring out how he could do more and do it better. And I don't know how much of that would have happened. We never would have been able to move up here to this property that he loved so much in North Florida had I not taken action. It only happened. All this stuff only happened because I took action. And if I had not taken action, if I had not gotten over the crap that was in my head, and believe me, it was a load of it, none of it would have happened. And so here's what I would say to you. You don't know the future. You don't know when everything will change in your life or the life of someone in your family. You don't know how long you have. You don't know how long your loved ones have. You just do not know. You've got to motivate yourself, and you've got to do it with urgency. I can't tell you exactly how to do it. I can tell you how it happened with me. And unfortunately, you know, I look back and I wonder, what if I didn't have that motivation? Would I have had the same success? And I can honestly tell you, not likely. It changed the way I acted. It changed the way I thought. I could no longer abide with myself making excuses. I loved my son. I knew he would never have a normal life. He'd never know the love of a woman. He'd never have his own family. He'd never be able to take his time and sit back and enjoy, because his time was ticking down. The clock was running. I was so very, very aware of that ticking. I couldn't make excuses to myself because I'd have been letting him down. You know, I know your situation's different, but the clock is ticking. You may not be able to see it like I could. It was impressed on me. But if you have difficulty taking action, consider Garth's story. Figure out how you can motivate yourself. Because you can motivate yourself every day to take action. And you have to. You just have to do it. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to your family. The excuses! You make the excuses. I know. Believe me, I know excuses. And in the end, if that's all you do, that's all you'll have. You know, it's been the sixth anniversary of his death is in, gosh, three, 4 weeks here. And we think about him every day. We miss him. He meant so much to us. He was such an example for me of how to live a life. But a lot of that happened. A lot of those things happened because of me. Because I took action. Because I wouldn't accept the excuses anymore, because that clock was ticking and I knew it was ticking. And I don't know, you know, it's that urgency. You've got to have that urgency factor. If you don't have that urgency factor, then you're lost. I believe that. You're lost. You've got to figure out how to put that urgency into your life to do the things that and not just plot and plan and scheme, to just do the things that need to be done in order for you to achieve what you want to achieve. Anyway, that's my story. That's Garth's story, and I hope it has some value to you. You know, almost 50 years ago, I played college football for the University of Oregon. We weren't very good, but times change. In 2011, Oregon lost to Auburn in the national championship game. In 2012, the Ducks won the Rose Bowl for the first time in 95 years. and finished fourth in the country. And last year they won the Fiesta Bowl and finished number two in the country. And what makes Oregon football special these days is not great players. I guarantee you there's at least 20 universities that generally get higher rated high school players than Oregon does. But if you've seen them play in the last few years, you know the Ducks are the fastest team in football. I don't mean the players are faster. They aren't necessarily, but they run plays faster. Most college teams take 25 to 30 seconds to get ready and run the next play. Oregon averages about 15 seconds between plays. 11 or 12 seconds isn't unusual. And what that means is they always run more plays than the opponent. Most of the plays don't work. They fail. But they fail fast. And they run another play. And they fail fast again, and they run another play. They put consistent pressure on that other defense, play after play after play. Now and then they hit a good one. Here and there they score. Their system of failing fast has led them into the national championship picture every year. And, you know, you weren't there with me 50 years ago, but you have no idea what that program was like when I was there. The change is astonishing to me. But for the Ducks, it's all about making decisions fast, fast, fast. And that's a model. That's a model for you. You know, make decisions faster. Help your prospects make decisions faster. The faster you make decisions, right or wrong, the more experience you get, the better you'll get at network marketing. When you make a wrong decision, and you will, you'll make plenty of them, you can change it. But when you make no decision, you're stuck. You can't move forward. You know, and I'm sure you've been there, and boy, I've been there plenty of times with no decision. I'll think about it. It's the worst place in the world to be. And we all struggle at times with decisions, and I'd like you to listen to the most famous words of literature's most famous character and picture the torment in his mind. He goes back and forth, over whether to kill himself. Can't decide, because he's worried he might have nightmares after he's dead. This guy is seriously nuts. He's absolutely stuck. And a lot of people close to him wind up dying because of his paralysis by analysis. So just listen to his thought process. To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing, end them? To die, to sleep? No more. And by asleep, to say, we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished. To die, to sleep, to sleep, perchance to dream. Oh, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil must give us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, the law's delay, the insolence of office, the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he himself might his quietus make with a bare bodkin? Who would fardels bear to grunt and sweat under a weary life, but that the dread of something after death, the undiscovered country from whose born no traveler returns, puzzles the will, and makes us rather bear those ills we have than fly to others that we know not of? Thus, conscience does make cowards of us all, and thus the native hue of resolution is sicklied over with the pale cast of thought, and enterprises of great pith and moment, with this regard, their currents turn awry and lose the name of action. Lose the name of action. And the key for you and me is to minimize the times that we lose the name of action. When I was, back to football for a minute, when I was in high school, I can remember a game where I was the right tackle, and I got up to the line of scrimmage, and I forgot to play. I could not remember what I was supposed to do. And And the ball was hiked, and both teams both teams went at it at this play, and I was still there. I was still in place. I hadn't moved. And at the end of that play, the coach called me over to the sideline, and he says, "Son, if you don't know what to do, hit somebody." And it took me a while, but I realized that's terrific advice. If you don't know what to do, if you're unsure of what to do, hit somebody. Do something. You know, something good might happen. And for sure, nothing good is going to happen if you just stand there. Believe me, nothing good happened on that play. You know, I get emails from time to time. Not so much now as I used to, but I get emails from from people who want something, and I can't figure out what they want. I read it, and it's just not clear. And sometimes it's really not clear. Sometimes I have a clue, but you know, now I mean, there was a time way back when I used to try to figure it out and help them along. I don't do that anymore. I just ignore it. But you know, if you're going to ask somebody for something, you need to have a plan, and you need to have those, you know, three or four steps of your plan written out, what you want. You know, if you want help on writing an ad, write out three or four ads and ask for, ask for comments on that. Or give me 10 titles to choose from, 10 titles that you've come up with. You know, it's important to see that you're working on something. And not just looking for a handout. And like I say, I get emails from time to time. They're looking for a handout. And what I know, and the reason I say this is, a leader makes decisions. Let me tell you, this is the wrong, network marketing is the wrong place to be if you aren't going to be a leader. If you aren't a leader now, or are planning your life to be a leader, you're in the wrong place. There is no future for you in network marketing. Only leaders are successful in network marketing. Only leaders achieve their dreams in network marketing. And that has to be part of your plan. Becoming a leader and doing the things necessary to be a leader. You know, and again, a leader makes decisions. You know, right or wrong, that's not that big a deal. Just make decisions. You can change later if it's wrong. Make a decision, get into action. And this is crazy, but I've seen it myself in my own network marketing career. Even idiotic decisions, really wrong decisions, can get decent results because they lead to action, and action is what's key. You know, again, I think your plan to be a leader, and you need to have one, you need to have that plan to be a leader, it's way more important than your plan to make money. I would put the money plan on the burner. Focus on being a leader. You know, and how do you know a leader? They make decisions. If you keep making decisions, here and there, you'll get some right. And somebody will notice, and they'll follow you. And others will notice and follow you, and that makes you a leader. When people are following you, when you see people are following you, you look back there, huh? I'll be darned. You know, that's when you realize you're a leader. And believe me, that's exactly how it worked with me. You know, I can't speak for others, but I was that introverted green personality for a long time, and then I did some stuff, and I looked back behind me, and there were people following me, much to my amazement. So, you know, you work out your own plan to be a leader, and talk to your prospects, and this is, you know, one of the things I love about these calls is that they're not, I mean, they're for you, but, you know, there's an old saying that you learn more by teaching than you do by being a student. You know, you learn more by teaching what you've learned. And the same thing with your prospects. Teach them. So work out with them their plan to be a leader. And that's what's going to give you the biggest reward. When you get them working on their plan to be a leader, make that a recruiting tool for you. Start working with them immediately. Your prospects, the people in your group, on their plan to be a leader. How are they going to do that? How are they going to achieve that? Productive writing is constantly making decisions. You can't worry about doing it right. You just have to get a finished product, and you get better over time. It's going out there and doing it. That's the key. And part of that is having a sense of urgency. You know, success isn't dependent on what you know. If it was, Greens would run everything. Hamlet would have been a genius, but he wasn't. We had a president a few years ago, a very blue personality, made decisions all over the place. But when he wanted to slow things down, he turned green. On the witness stand in court, answering a question, he said, "Well, that depends on what the definition of is." Boy, and this guy was as blue as they come, and that statement is as green as they come. And it's just, to me, it's an illustration of if you don't want to make a decision, if you don't want other people to make a decision, then you really slow things down. And that's exactly what we don't want to do. There's a Greek saying, this goes back centuries, many centuries. Ethos, pathos, logos, actos. Ethos, pathos, logos, actos. And translated English, that's credibility, understanding, logic, action. Credibility, understanding, logic, action. For us, it sums up so much in those four words. For us, I think it's a good plan to focus on understanding. You know, we tend to want to be understood and make a big deal out of making sure we are understood. But I think you get farther, you achieve more, you get more of what you want in life if you understand others and you focus on understanding them. If you're not a leader, again, you're always going to struggle in network marketing. And so how do you become a leader? Make a decision, act on it. Make another one, act on it. Make another one, act on it. Repeat, rinse and repeat. and you do this, with no safety net. It's scary, believe me. I know it's scary. But at some point, after you've been doing it a while, and you get experienced at it, and you get good at it, you realize you don't need the safety net. You don't need it anymore. And especially, I think it's true for everybody, but especially for a green personality, that safety net is so crucial. and to suddenly realize that you don't need it anymore, I can't describe to you how exhilarating that feeling is, and it just adds to your leadership ability when you have been through that and had that feeling, and you don't need that safety net anymore. Everybody says they want freedom. Freedom does not come with a safety net. You want financial freedom. You want freedom from work. There's all these freedoms. You have to, I'm not saying get rid of your safety net right now, go home, drop it tonight. I'm telling you, work out a plan. Put a time frame on there. You've got to get yourself in a position where you can get rid of that safety net. And where you're making decisions and good decisions. And you have experience making bad decisions, and you make better decisions, and That's when you're at the point where you're a real leader, you know, and you look over your shoulder and there's people following you. You know, for network marketing, you've got to get yourself in that leadership position. Otherwise, it's just too tough. you're wasting your time here if you aren't working on getting in that leadership position. And we talk from time to time on this call about the book by Jeffrey Olson, The Slight Edge. A terrific book if you haven't read it, The Slight Edge by Jeffrey Olson. And what Olson talks about, among the many things, is consistency. You know, what should you work on more than anything? And what you should work on more than anything is action. You know, making decisions, doing something. Not planning. if you've read the book, you know that, gosh, I think it's about page 118, if I recall correctly. I've read it so many times I lose count, but someplace there near the end of the book, he talks about his plan, which was to building a huge international organization, and his company was just opening in Germany, and his plan was two words: find Germans. Find Germans. You know, once you get started, spending time on a plan is a waste of time, mostly because it's going to change. As soon as you get in motion, as soon as you start taking action, you're going to discover things, and your plan's going to change. And the time you spent working out a 10-step plan, is you're going to look back and say, well, you're going to laugh at yourself, because 9.5 of those steps you're never going to do, because once you're out in the real world, you know, that's not part of your plan. So, you know, start with some very simple 1 or 2 step plan and action. Make a decision, do something. You know, again, that's what makes you a leader. Once you make a habit of doing something time after time after time, and you begin to get a feel for it, and you start to learn what works, someone somewhere is going to start following you, and then there will be more. And some of those people who follow you will talk to others, and others will follow you. Again, when I looked over my shoulder back in 1993 and saw people starting to follow me, I was stunned. I couldn't believe it. What are you doing? You know, it was, what's going on here? This hasn't happened before. Are you people crazy? But it worked out for them, and it worked out for me. So that short, simple plan is the key, and then get into action. And the more you do things consistently, the more enthusiastic you get, and that also brands you as a leader. And the more fun it becomes, and as it becomes more fun, as stuff starts to work, you get more enthusiastic about it, and you become more of a leader. It really snowballs. You know, another guy we've talked about on these calls sometimes is one of my favorite people, Scott Ginsburg. What Scott says is, don't be stopped by not knowing how. And you might there's a lot to learn from Scott's site. He's the expert on approachability. And his site is hellomynameisscott.com, hellomynameisscott.com. A lot of free information there that's really worthwhile to you. But what Scott says is, don't be stopped by not knowing how. An entrepreneur, by definition, is someone who takes risks. You have to do some crazy things. You can't let a little thing like knowing how stand in your way. So you don't know how. Great excuse. I can't do it. Don't know how. Okay, you're dead in the water. What Scott says is, and this is so true, how is dangerous? How is a dream destroyer? How is the difference between talkers and doers? Let me go back to Hamlet for a minute. Thus, conscience does make cowards of us all. And thus, the native hue of resolution is sicklied over with a pale cast of thought. And enterprises of great pith and moment, with this regard, their actions turn awry, and their currents turn awry and lose the name of action. You know, that native hue of resolution being sicklied over, we've been there. I've been there, you've been there. You can't have your native view of resolution sicklied over. It's the end. You've got to get that native view of resolution healthy and working and out there and active and grab that name of action. Again, Hamlet was a guy who was constantly worried about how ideas, projects, and movements fall off the face of the earth because people get stopped by not knowing how. And they totally focus on how. I don't know how. And the longer you stay stuck on how, the longer you don't do anything. And so the lesson is, focus on what? Focus on what? And the how will eventually appear. You know, go back to the idea of writing out 10 steps of a plan. You know, you're trying to write out the how. But once you get started, it'll all change. you'll go back and say, you know, none of these, this is ridiculous. That's not how I'm going to do it. So you need to know the what, and you need to focus on the what. And do actions that lead you to the what that logically you know are going to help you achieve the what. And as you do that, as you look back, the how will appear, because the how is how you did it. You can't know in advance how you're going to do it. You have to do it in order to figure out the how. I can't tell you what a difference it made in my life when I finally understood that. You know, I don't know that my system works for you. I think it does. Maybe it does. I'm not that blue personality. I have a really difficult time seeing the big picture. You know, I see one tree at a time. No matter how big that forest is, for a long time, I'm just going from tree to tree to tree. You know, when I was younger, I used to love jigsaw puzzles, and especially doing them with my kids. And you know, I'd always start with the edge pieces. I mean, probably everybody does that. And I've got the picture on the box cover, and then you start putting the thing together. And no matter what kind of problem I'm working on. You know, and I don't necessarily recommend this, but it works for me. I start forward from the beginning, and then I hit a point pretty quickly where I can't go any further. And then I look where I want to wind up at the end, and I start working backwards from there. And then I hit a point where I can't go any further. But I know I can logically figure out what's going to be one or two points in the middle, and then I start working either direction from those points. You know, and again, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. And somewhere, at some point, the lines start to connect. But the key is to just take action. You know, be clear about the results. Be flexible about the process. Be clear about the results. Be flexible about how you get those results. You know, the what can be defined right away. You know, right now, what the what is, what it is you want. The how takes time and patience and persistence. And for me, I can't figure out the how until I look back and see, oh, that's how I did it. You know, the how for me is only visible in retrospect. the what can lead to immediate action. The how can take weeks or months to get started. I've done that. I've done that. Months and months of figuring out the how. The what can lay groundwork for the how to materialize. But the how will never come into being without first identifying the what. You're just almost never, ever going to start out knowing the how. You know, even if you've got somebody else's step-by-step plan of someone who's done it successfully, and I hear this all the time, you know, I'm just following that plan exactly. Well, I followed some plans exactly, and they haven't worked for me. I know they work for someone else. You know, and so there's good ideas in there, but it doesn't always work for you. So I would say, again, what? Focus on what. Don't focus on the how, because the how is a dead end until you've actually done the what. Take the first step. As my high school football coach said, hit somebody. Hit somebody. Do something. You know, anything. But do it. Take an action. Makes me think of my own MasterCard commercial here. Ideas, a dime a dozen. Step-by-step plan, $29. Execution, priceless. So here's some ideas to help you focus on the what and to help bring your how into your vision. For me, I start with lists. The moment you get a new idea, make a list. Listing is the simplest, quickest, most efficient way to capture your idea before it flies away to, but you never wrote me down land. You know, your brain is a self-organizing machine. When you list, you create patterns, groups, piles of material that can come together on their own if you write them down, and that'll help you completely explore the what, so you know exactly what it is to focus on. And when you want to achieve something, take a bit of time. Not a day, less than a day, but take a bit of time, a few hours maybe, and take a mental dump, you know, and you create lists like what my idea is, what my idea isn't, where the idea came from, why I want to do this project, who the customer is, what the value proposition I'm making to them is, how my idea is unique, who I need to talk to about this idea, my goals, potential benefits of the idea, resources or items I might need in order to move forward, barriers or challenges, what the idea could become, what I want it to become, the strengths of the idea, the weaknesses, the dangers. You know, I would list until I've, nothing more occurs to me at that time. You know, empty your mind. Update, edit, revisit the list regularly. I do that. But once you've got a few things listed, and you start to get a pretty good picture of the what it is, what's your first logical action? What's the most logical thing you can do? And do it. Do it now. You know, and the chances are, it's a right action. But you're never going to know that unless you do it. You know, and maybe you're not doing exactly right. You're never going to know that unless you do it. You have to get started. You have to get into action. You know, don't be Hamlet. don't be me for the first 43 or so years of my life. You know. Be a leader. Figure out your plan to be a leader, and get started on that, and do it. Take action. I hope you guys have found this useful. It's a kind of a glimpse into my life and how things have happened for me, and I'm just I've lived this. I know how critical it is to be in action and not in thought. Thought is the wrong place to be. Focus on the what, not the how. Appreciate everybody being on the call tonight. Hope you guys have found this beneficial. And we'll talk to you guys on the next call. Act. Make a decision. Talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.